This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lee Chui Lin. Last week at the Leadership Energy Summit Asia 2016, Bigger Picture producer Chua Antek caught up with Isabel Madem, the co-founder of XRunner. XRunner was founded in 2011 to bring a waterless toilet system to the more than 9 million Peruvians who lack access to adequate sanitation. Antek started off by asking Isabel how she transitioned from microfinance consultancy into the work that she currently does.
Well, microfinance was a job that I found after university, and where I thought that it was going to be sort of my dream come true in terms of doing something for society and especially for the poor. And so I worked in all microfinance maybe a year and a half, 2 years. But I got very disappointed as soon as I landed, I think, in Africa, or Tanzania, which is where I was sent. Not because of anything of the country, but just because I realized that that combination didn't make a lot of sense for me personally. And I realized that I didn't want to be traveling around the continent all the time. And so then I was sort of lost in Berlin back home, because I had quit my job in Africa and I decided to move to a new European city, and that was Berlin. And I was very, very lost and very unhappy. And I just met the founder of XRunner, and we started talking about the idea. I really liked the fact that it would be something very simple, and with the goal of solving such a big and basic problem, which is sanitation. And then I just sort of got into it. I didn't. It wasn't a radical decision. It was something that sort of started gaining its own momentum.
This co-founder is Jesse.
Yes.
But were you not a co-founder as well?
Yes, I'm co-founder. The thing is that when I started, it wasn't immediately sure that I was going to co-found as well. It was like, let's work on this together. Let's see how it goes, and then essentially it ended up being co-founder. Yeah.
So this idea of bringing sanitation, how did it come about? Was it Jesse's idea, or did you develop it together with her?
Well, in a way, the idea of finding a solution for urban slum households didn't come either from Jesse nor from me, but with somebody who sort of initiated the idea of XRunner. She was interested in that, then was put in touch with Jesse, who was at that time working on topics relating sewage treatment, waste treatment, et cetera, and then when I joined, we started to develop or think about how all of this could actually be put into practice, right? And how that could be translated into an idea that actually that in reality can work for households. And that's when we started developing the whole pickup system behind it, the fee charging, and what it is today. So, yeah, that would be.
What does the name mean?
The name doesn't mean anything. It was originally invented for India. And in the Indian market or culture, sanitation was, I'm not sure if it is still, but it was a huge taboo. And so X was supposed to symbolize that taboo. And Runner was supposed to be a sort of joke or sort of should symbolize the fact that sometimes you run to the toilet when you have to go, when it's very urgent, but also because the model of the toilet at that time was something that you could sort of turn into a wheel. And so in a way, the toilet could run.
You mentioned India. Why didn't the idea work in India?
India didn't work because of many reasons, both internal team stuff as well as the Indian reality. There is, as I said, right, sanitation is a huge taboo and topic in India. We as a team weren't Indian, so we didn't. I think that was a big, in my opinion, that's a big barrier. But also the fact that there were the NGOs, the organizations that we were trying to partner up with, that wasn't really working out too well for many reasons. And then there were regulations in place that also would have made it difficult for us to try our idea out. So from my perspective back then, I just thought that it was too complex of a mix of things for us, small little startup to try to fight a huge fight for something that we hadn't even tested yet. So, yeah.
And what made it more feasible in Peru?
I think what some of the reasons that made it might have made it more feasible in Peru was, one, just the fact that I am from Peru in a way. And so the, what I said before, that we didn't have cultural access to India in Peru, through my sort of being Peruvian, speaking the language, having been there, that was already sort of helped. But then I think it also is a huge difference, is that the slums in Peru are awful, and I would not want to live like that, and I don't think anyone should live like that. But still, compared to Indian, from what I saw from Indian slums or also African slums, it's not as desperate. And so people have a sort of are pretty educated consumers. And I mean consumers, not educated, but sort of they're, or let's say they have a strong self-identification as consumers and as customers, and that they can have, you know, that they can have demands, and that they can expect something from a product. And that's something I wanted, to have sort of challenging customers. And then also culturally, I think there are a lot less barriers in Peru than in India, because just sort of the whole male-female inequality is, there is a lot of inequality, and there is a lot of violence against women still, but it's not as not as established as I saw it in India, in the sense there are not that many differences. I mean, women and boys are all together the whole time, girls and boys. I mean, it's not, there were things, also religion and all that stuff didn't seem to be such a big issue in Peru. I hope I didn't say anything sort of offensive, but I mean, yeah, that's what I was trying to describe.
So when you say that the conditions of the slums is, you wouldn't want to live there. It's hard, I think, for us to imagine as well how tough the condition can be. And I think you wrote that more than 2 billion people worldwide lack access to modern sanitation.
Yeah.
Can you describe for us what it's like to live without toilets?
Well, I mean, we can all do that mental journey, right? We can try to think, okay, well, how many times do I actually go to the toilet every day? Because I think we don't even think about it, because it's so, you know, it's a non-issue. So then if we think about how many times we go to the toilet, we then add to that imagination sort of the fact that you don't have the toilet that you think you have, so that you have to sort of go out and look for a place that you can go, or, you know, go to your toilet, which would then be a hole in Peru, it would be a hole in the ground that people will have had to make, a pit latrine, and just, you know, go there. And that's, I think, the most undignified part, because you it's a hole. Because of it being a hole, it becomes, you know, very toxic, and it has insects and flies. Children are afraid of falling in, because they do fall in at some point. And so not having a toilet is suddenly a huge issue, because whenever you feel like it, you can't go. I mean, I think we all sometimes go to the toilet and just feel like happy, and then like this is, you know, you feel relieved literally, but these people, the 2 billion people, don't. It's super uncomfortable and just not, it's super bad for their health. In other countries it's even dangerous for women, I mean life-threatening. Just as I say, not dignified. I mean, having toilets is a human right, and so basically it's as though you lived, and every day a human right is denied to you in a way.
So how does this waterless toilet system of X-Runner work?
So the way it works is that it has, at its core, a portable dry toilet that is produced in Sweden by a brand called Separate. They are specialists in that field. And the way that toilet works is that it separates urine from feces. So all of us, both men and women, our body actually digests everything in a way that liquid and solid is we sort of, it comes out separately, right? Which makes sense. And so the dry toilet tries to keep that up and say, well, let's keep it separate, because there is a reason for that to be separate. And so the toilet has sort of like a division, a urine diversion. So in that, the urine goes in one direction, the feces falls into a bucket that is in the toilet. You can add all sorts of ingredients to, or not ingredients, but sort of like, we use sawdust, for instance. So you can put sawdust, and then it dries it up, and it covers it. And all of this has, as a result, the fact that it doesn't smell. and the fact that it doesn't attract any insects. And so it suddenly becomes just a plain, comfortable, nice-looking toilet. And the bucket that fills up with feces, as I just described, we pick that up every week. So customers don't have to ever worry about a pit latrine filling up or just the waste. They just hand it over to us and we take it away. And we take it to our compost treatment plant where we treat the feces in a process or in a way that we have designed with the University of Lima, and a couple of biologists and engineers, and turn it into compost that you can then use to, to make, you know, for parks and gardens and stuff like that.
So how much would it cost a household to buy, install, and then maintain the service?
So for now, the customers, Peruvian customers, the only thing they have to pay for is the monthly pickup fee, and that is $13. Obviously in the Peruvian context, right? But that's all they have to do right now. The toilet is something that comes with the service. So if you stop paying for the service, we will also pick up the toilet. And as long as you pay for it, you can have the toilet. It's yours.
That was Bigger Picture producer Chua Antek speaking to Isabel Madem, the co-founder of X-Runner, a waterless toilet system which is transforming the lives of 72 million people living without toilets across Latin America. Up next, they discuss the taboos of working in the toilet business and why such a basic right remains elusive to so many in 2016. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Last week, we had Bigger Picture producer Chua Antek catching up with Isabel Madem, the co-founder of X-Runner, at the Leadership Energy Summit Asia 2016. In the second part of the interview, they continued to discuss the health risks of pit latrines and why the waterless toilet system can improve the health of millions.
Is it a challenge to convince them that this is the better option, the superior alternative to pit latrines?
No. I think they are very aware of and obviously that they don't want that. What is hard is to convince them that this is the better, that it is worth investing in this now. The reason that that is an issue is because public organizations or the government keeps not saying the truth. And the truth would be to say, you will not have sewage within the next 15 years. They don't say that. They keep everyone sort of in suspense, and which has as an effect that people think that they're going to get sewage channels or running water, really soon. And so when we talk about when we sort of sell our toilet, they often think, wait, but okay, yeah, I like this, I want this. But I heard, in our last assembly, we were told that, you know, in 6 months, the whole procedure is going to start for us to get sewage. So I don't know if I want to invest in this now. It's not, they don't tell us that in that way, but that's something that we've seen is one of the biggest challenges actually that we face. And it puts us in a difficult position because we can't say, oh no, but we know that, you know, the government has told us behind closed doors that you won't get sewage. It's kind of weird. We can't really do that either. So it puts us in a difficult position.
You mentioned earlier that modern sanitation should be a human right.
Yeah. So, well, it is.
Yeah. Are you working with any local partners, whether it's the local government in Lima or the federal government in Peru, as you mentioned, because you obviously have to talk to them, right?
Mm-hmm. No, we're not working with them yet. We are beginning to work with the local municipality, but that is sort of a very slow train that to get in motion. Federal government and so on is something that we are very interested in, especially because the new government has voiced a very strong interest in bringing water, especially to everyone, sanitation as well. And so we want to work with them. We definitely want to work with them. I think they still have to figure out how they're going to reach the goals that they have declared they're going to reach. But yeah.
And is cost a big issue for you? Because if it's cheap, then I don't see why the government wouldn't just hop on the solution that you're providing.
I don't understand why the government wouldn't do that either. I mean, it is a cost-intensive operation that we do, but I think it's the most cost-efficient at the same time. I mean, I would like to see a company that does what we do in such a professional manner and providing such high quality to our customers while trying to be extremely cost-efficient. I would like to see that because it's not easy, and And I think that the government or whoever wants to get involved in this have to understand that. But sanitation is a topic that is, first of all, not really interesting. I mean, it's not like people love talking for hours about how sewage is treated and all of that. It is something that is very complex. People always, you know, it's not just, as you can see with our model, it's not, the problem is not solved by just putting a toilet in a home. You also have to take care of whatever is produced. And so I think people are very skeptical about new ideas, right? They're like, well, you know, it's not the traditional thing. The thing that everybody all over the world does is sewage channels. So we should kind of go for that as well. And so I think more than it being cost intensive or cost being an issue, it's more the sort of being afraid to pioneer something from the side of the government, I think.
On your website, you wrote that there are more than 9 million people who lack adequate sanitation systems in Peru. Is that not a very sizable constituency? Who would make this a voting issue? Sorry, just digressing a little
bit. No. It's a good question. And I mean, the current president did repeatedly say that he wants to bring water to everyone, and this is not, it's not okay for them to live under those circumstances. But I think I can't give you an answer to your question because I don't understand it either. I don't understand either how such, there are such levels of poverty in Peru, and it is not something that gets discussed in elections ever, and not, or, and if, then in very populist ways and not in serious terms in election. And then once the governors or whoever gets elected is in charge, it's, nothing is done.
X-Rena is called a social enterprise. Yeah. Is funding an issue for you?
It is. There are several answers to that. It's an issue for me because I just find it something that is very difficult. It's a lot of hard work, and it's not what I like doing, which is being in the community and you know, being with the customers and everything. It's an issue also because, again, sanitation is not a topic that is attractive. I mean, I think for funders or donors, it is much, they would prefer a million times to donate or to invest in companies where the result is, I don't know, young girls having learned something, or someone that lived in poverty now doesn't, you know, to have this before and after. In our case, it's the impact is some people still live in the same home, but they have a better toilet. But it's, look, this is my assumption. I'm not sure it's true, but I can imagine that for many organizations, it's just, they can't imagine putting a picture of somebody standing next to their new toilet in their annual report or something, you know? So it's just a topic that, as I say, it's so complex, it's so weird that is, people hesitate. But I have to say, we do have great foundations that do support us. We even got support from the government of Canada a couple of years ago, and so on. And so I think once that institutions or organizations have understood the value of what we do, really understood, then funding becomes really interesting. But to get people, especially impact investors, which is something that is en vogue now, have are very, very skeptical about this type of business model, because I think it's very unusual for social enterprises to have that their beneficiaries are also their customers, and that your revenues come from the bottom of the pyramid, right? It's something that is not done very much often. And so, yes, I don't know.
Because it's such a unique business, was there any model or any other business model that you could use as a template or to kind of sketch out your trajectory and how you would grow or scale?
No, not the trajectory, but we did always, you know, think about, for instance, we would sometimes compare ourselves with cell phone companies. So sometimes you get these deals where it's like you'll get the new iPhone for free, but you have to commit to a year or 2 years with us, something like that. That's the thinking behind it. We've tried to also study these companies. I don't know if in Malaysia you have these companies, these that sell cosmetic products, through sort of agents. So let's say in a community, someone says, well, I have this and this job, but I also have spare time to go around with my catalog and sell this to neighbors. And that's an interesting concept that we always try to understand, because cosmetics is something that you would think, well, that's not really a priority. And yet people invest in that and buy that, which, you know, totally fair choice. And so we want to understand that. We've invested a lot of time and energy in trying to understand how our customers make decisions and why they choose to buy something and why they choose to not buy something. And we've tried to study that both by studying our customers and by studying business models such as that.
So this journey started in 2011, 2012. Mm-hmm. What was the tipping point that made you realize this is something that it could work?
A similar question, Rajiv asked me a similar question on the stage, and what I said, I think, is what I would reply with this one as well, is that actually seeing my team being convinced of what we did. And my team is Peruvian, so it's one thing to be sort of an idealistic foreigner who thinks you know things better, maybe in a way, right? And another thing to be, you know, in your own country and seeing, yes, I want to change something in my country and I'm going to do it. And I believe in this idea. I think that was something that gave me a lot of hope and then just sort of the conviction of, yeah, we're doing something that's valuable. Obviously, apart from the fact that people were liking the toilet as well. But that was something that we were working on, and it's very satisfying to see that. But I think having a local team, super professional, and with a lot of energy pushing for that as well is something that I think kept me going.
I think this is the part where I ask you if you have any advice for aspiring change makers. Are there any regrets or teachable moments, that setbacks that you faced along this journey so far?
There are a lot of challenges, and I think that and setbacks as well. But I think it's important to understand, to be able to differentiate if a setback is something that is just giving you a message of, well, improve this about your business model or improve this about your team leadership. And, you know, if it's actually giving you information about things that you can improve, or if it's giving you information about whether or not your idea is actually working or not. And I think change makers, whoever wants to do something new or something to change the world, something that I think is important to know is that it's hard in ways that you just didn't expect, but not in superhuman ways. It's just like, so for instance, one of the things that happened to us was that sawdust suddenly became an issue, because we can't just use any sawdust. It has to be a special wood, and it has to be sort of in a certain shape. I didn't know that. And I just thought sawdust is sawdust, and it's one of the things that we have to just add. It became a huge issue for a while. And then we figured it out. So it's those kind of things that are hard, that you didn't expect, and that will annoy you, and that will be difficult. But it's kind of, those things happen. But at the same time, I think something that is super important for people who want to start something or change something is, and I don't think that's an advice that people usually give, but don't listen that much to other people. Because if you're the one who's going to do it, then often, you know, people give advice, and it's so easy to give advice, to sit on the other side and say, oh, well, this doesn't look like it's going to work, or maybe you should do this, maybe you should do that. And I remember I always listened a lot to what other people said, because I assumed they were saying it from a position of knowledge, until I realized, actually, in the end, I'm the one who knows, because I'm doing this. So I can be very selective with what I want to know and what feedback I will take seriously and which I won't. And so for young leaders, I would say be stubborn enough and don't assume that you don't know enough, because the fact that you're willing to do something is already a lot more than many people would do.
Final question would be, if poverty is eliminated, I guess that is the end goal, X-Runner would be out of business as well, because people would not be lacking in sanitation. So what is the end goal for X-Runner?
Well, I don't think that the end of poverty would necessarily be the end of X-Runner, because our aspiration is to become a sanitation solution, or be a sanitation solution that works for everyone. So this solution that we provide for the urban slums is a solution that we would also want to use ourselves. It's not something that I say, well, it's good enough for low-income households, I don't want to have something like that at home. Totally the opposite. It's something that I feel we should all actually be using. And so the end of poverty, if you want to put it in those words, is not connected with X-Runner, because in our dream, we would be the ones who would be doing the service and installing toilets everywhere.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Chuan Tech speaking to Isabel Madem, the co-founder of X-Runner, a waterless toilet system aiming to provide adequate sanitation to more than 9 million Peruvians and rid them of the health threats posed by poor sanitation. You've been listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.